School PR professionals spend a week or two each year networking, if they're lucky. We pour into this professional development, and the conversations drive us in our work. Collaboration is one of the best parts of our job, but then we go back to our daily work and the buzz of bright conversations and innovation starts to wear off.
Welcome to School PR Happy Hour. We seek to create a shared space of collaboration and an opportunity to continue those conversations long after the closing sessions of our state and national conferences.
We are a community of communicators that lean on each other in hard times and learn from each other regularly.
This podcast is about just that, getting to know each other better and sharing our passions about furthering education, one story at a time.
Welcome back to School PR Happy Hour. My name's Erin McCann. One of the things that I love most about School PR Happy Hour is how this journey takes us to some unexpected locations where we meet unexpected friends who teach us cool and unexpected things which make us better school PR practitioners. My guest today is a perfect example of just that. Amber Krasinski graduated from Hampshire College in Massachusetts with a bachelor's degree in film studies and is pursuing her master's degree in strategic communication at Sacred Heart University in Connecticut. She is passionate about media literacy, especially in children and students, and has extensive experience in working with virtual reality. I was not going to miss the opportunity to learn from Amber today and get some wisdom for all of you to learn as well. Amber, I am so happy that you're here. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. This is an absolute pleasure.
No, it's an honor.
I said that weird.
Oh, no, you're fine. You're great. You're perfect. Okay. For those of you listening, you probably picked up on the fact that I said that Amber is attending Sacred Heart. You've heard me talk about this as well. So Amber is actually one of my classmates, and I was lucky enough to get to know her over the last year. And when we took a class on virtual reality, she was so knowledgeable. So I knew that you guys had to learn from her today. So Amber, why don't we start off? We like to kind of introduce our guests by having them talk about their background and their educational journey. So tell us what brought you here today.
Oh goodness, quite the journey indeed. I really had my whole life planned out until I was 18 years old. I had my full colleges, you know, big spreadsheet all laid out in eighth grade. I had a very clear vision of what my educational journey would be. And then life kind of laughed at me and said, "What are you doing?" So I started off going to Smith College, and I was trying to kind of figure out if I wanted to stick with theater or not. And I took a film studies class and I loved it. And it tied right in with my language learning. It was really, really great. I love visual mediums, and I saw it as a natural progression from theater. And then I went to community college for a bit, and then I transferred to Hampshire to wrap up my bachelor's, and I really gravitated towards the research element and media literacy, and that's where I really dove into Access Television work, which a lot of people, they hear Access Television, they automatically think Wayne's World or something like that. But really, Access TV stations are really interesting because they provide transparency for local governments. They provide opportunities for community members to try, you know, really inaccessible equipment a lot of the times. You know, video production stuff is not cheap, and same with podcasting. And the cool thing about Access TV and a lot of the community media centers is that they are working to adapt to a world where, you know, people aren't traditionally locked into TV like they used to be about 30 years ago, you know?
Sure.
So one of the things that I was really driven to do was to expand media literacy, work with students, get people to understand, you know. And I ended up getting this job up in North Shore of Boston, you know, very kind of, when you think of a Boston stereotype, that's kind of the stereotype of the town that I lived in. Very like, you know, we'll tell it like it is. And it was very intimidating at first because I didn't really know anybody. And when I started really thriving in that role was when I took ownership of my own learning and my own professional development. And one of the things that I became fascinated with was this concept of virtual reality. Now, this was back in 2016, and the Oculus had been out for a bit, but everybody kind of saw it just as like a gaming thing. And I went and I talked to my executive director, and I said, look, this is an interesting way to go when it comes to education. This is a form of technology that nobody's really talking about. And I became really interested in 360 filmmaking as well, because it's such an immersive experience. And every director's goal is to make your audience feel as immersed in the content as you possibly can for as long as you can. So having something where you're physically in an environment without being physically in an environment fascinated me. And I really wanted to make it as accessible as possible to people that were interested. And the students I was working with were fascinated by this and wanted to know more. So I was very sneaky, and I was able to use my professional development funds for the year. And I went to Silicon Valley to this big tech conference with all of these, you know, heavy hitters, all these like investment people that are trying to get in the ground floor of virtual reality, and these different developers. And I was in way over my head. I had no business being there, but I wanted to be in the room because I wanted to hear what they were saying and what the new trends would be. So that way I could go back to my station and say, look, this is what these big corporations are talking about right now. What are we going to do about it? And how is it going to impact us at a local level, and especially our students? And so, you know, I gathered a lot of insights from that because I'd been doing some research online, but it wasn't giving me a lot. And what I found was that a lot of people, you know, are really seeing this as a form of ad revenue and as a form of almost like manipulation a little bit. There's not a lot of research that is fully complete about how this is impacting people's brains. Okay. And the fact that there was a, you know, app that somebody was putting out where it was a immersive experience. You're on the soccer field with Ronaldo and the whole team, you know, goes over to the sidelines and, you know, in your virtual headset, you join them and you grab a Nestle drink. And that whole experience was just a big ad. And even one of my favorite, you know, experiences was also an ad. And it really just sent me into a bit of a tailspin because I'm like, this is new technology. There's not much about it. And I have people asking me about it. So I need to learn. So, you know, I really felt it important in my role as a director of educational services to make sure that we provided people the best possible resources for them to feel empowered to make decisions about how they're consuming media and what media they're consuming. So that's why I kind of started expanding outward, you know, to the broader community. I started working with more adults and trying to get that intergenerational element going. And I was able to do some really cool stuff. So I was shocked. If you told me when I was 18 years old that I was going to be doing virtual reality and 360 filmmaking, I would have just laughed at you and said, I'm going to be working on Broadway, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
So, that's a bit of my educational journey. It's a little unorthodox, but it felt very meant to be, because when I was, you know, about to graduate college, I was kind of, you know, still waitressing, trying to find my footing a bit, and I had been wanting to apply to grad school. I was actually studying for the GREs the day that I got an email from my former coworker that said, hey, I just started at a new station. Do you want to apply? And it was 3 hours away from me, basically. Mm-hmm. So I said no. And I said no multiple times. And then, you know, the executive director reached out to me and he said, hey, I really think you might be good for this fit, for this youth coordinator role. And you know, I jumped at it and I was like, all right, I'll interview. And I drove all the way out there and I uprooted my life just so that way I could do this job, because I felt really compelled and I wanted to work in a community similar to where I grew up. Very like working class, you know, starting to get more diverse, but there's those tensions there, and trying to navigate those sorts of things was challenging, but I wanted to try it. So, you know, bit the bullet and moved on out to Eastern Massachusetts. And so the youth coordinator role then turned into the director of educational services. I advocated for myself, which was, you know, not easy, but I got that role. And then now what I'm doing, I left the station because I really felt it was important to pursue some of my own production work. And I, frankly, was really burnt out. I completely burned myself out. And it's hard when you're so passionate about something, it's hard to kind of define boundaries a lot. So
I totally agree.
That's kind of where, yeah, completely. And I think what was really kind of a turning point was when I realized I could do some of this stuff on my own. I can do this. So, you know, and then the pandemic happened. So I said, right. All right, good a time as any to go to grad school. And I started picking up more with my production, my freelance work. I was working with some restaurants. I worked with Planned Parenthood of Southern New England on a 360 mm-hmm. video of their new facility. And I also, you know, picked up some other jobs too. But I fell into this role with the Central Massachusetts Agency on Aging. And I kind of, you know, at first was like, what am I doing? I have like 12, 15 years of experience with kids. Why am I switching gears? And I decided to pursue this because it's another challenge. This is, you know, an older population. So I'm trying to figure out ways to reach different community members the best I can. And right now I'm the director of marketing over there. I work part-time. But you know, it's been really rewarding and I've been able to grow in even more ways than I, you know, even imagined. So just kind of taking those experiences and building on them has been a big part of my career in general. And people will look at my resume and be like, oh my goodness, she has worked every job in the book. Good grief. But, you know, I think that's something that needs to kind of be appreciated. I've developed a really interesting skill set because of all of those different experiences that I've had. And I think that's something that I didn't necessarily get growing up. There was a very rigid view of what success looked like. And the fact that I'm kind of shattering that a little bit just based on what I'm doing is really, it's cool, but it's terrifying. I wish I had known that life would be so scary as a, you know, growing up.
I think maybe we don't know that life is going to be so scary because we're going to have to go through it anyway. So if you know what you're walking into, you might be a little bit more timid about taking those opportunities when they come your way. But Amber, you're saying so many things that I want to talk about. I mean, I'm just, my favorite guests are the ones where I've prepared all of these questions. And then in your intro, you've already kind of addressed most of the points, but then you've given me so many other nuggets that we're going to talk about. So I've got several things I want to talk about, but let's go back to your work in VR. So you said you kind of happened upon learning about virtual reality in 2016. I was really, really interested in what you were saying about kind of those early forms of that being basically major ad revenue, which I think from the marketing side, we could take a pretty critical look. But most of our audience listening are either school PR practitioners that are working in a K-12 setting. We do have a handful of college students that are hoping to work in this industry. So how could we take some of the opportunities, maybe not so much heavily focus on the ad work, but some of these 360 film opportunities? Schools are starting to build out marketing plans kind of for the first time in the last couple of years where we haven't really needed to traditionally market. What are ways that our audience could take some of the opportunities that are available with virtual reality and make them work for our communities and for our school systems?
Oh my goodness, there are so many applications. I actually was really bent on, I want to get VR and 360 into the Billerica school system. That's my goal. I want to do that. And I want to tie it to state standards because if I can go to a math teacher and say, hey, you know, we can do some film production stuff and we can also examine what it means to have different angles for 360 video. And look, it meets your state standards. You know, that's a little bit easier to get a teacher to buy in. When it comes to school PR and just schools in general, I mean, 360 is a great opportunity to show off your school, show off your new classrooms. If you just redid the gym, you know, show that off. Or even what we've done, I've done in the past is like immersive experiences where you're playing sports or you're at a sporting event. And if somebody can't physically be there, they can look around and feel like they're in the crowd, which is a really cool experience. And it's really great for, you know, people that are all over the country, you know, grandparents that want to see their grandkids play volleyball. From a marketing standpoint, it's really, really good to have video in general just because it's been shown by so much research to just have more of a connection with the audience to resonate a bit more. And when it comes to 360, you really can show off what your school can do and what it can look like. You can have people, you know, experience what it's like to sit in a classroom. Obviously, there's, you know, consent things and students and all that, but you can make people feel like they are in the school without being in the school, which, considering the pandemic and everything, is like a gold mine. You know, it's really, really it's awesome. It's really great to help people feel like they're still connected with the physical space while also remaining safe. So in terms of like what PR practitioners can do, I've seen a lot of success with some of those, you know, walkthrough videos where you take it. And 360 cameras are pretty reasonably priced now. The price point's gotten pretty good. So in terms of like getting buy-in from administration and all of that, it's a few hundred dollars. And then it's just some video editing at this point. There's a lot more opportunities now to do things versus when I first started. Oh my goodness. Sure. Just trying to edit a 360 video in 2016 was like so many plugins.
No, it's making my head
so complicated. Yeah, it's ridiculous. But then you go on Facebook now and you can, you know, somebody posts a 360 photo and you can just cruise around and click around at your leisure. It's not like anything, you know, a big deal. So this is just going to keep blowing up and expanding, especially as we try to figure out, okay, pandemic's, you know, still going on now, but once things are a little bit more even keeled, how can we make sure we're sustainably thinking about reaching out to our audience? And how can we be more mindful about accessibility, because a lot of schools and a lot of spaces aren't fully accessible. So wouldn't it be cool to have, you know, some sort of student art showcase where if somebody can't make it up the stairs, you know, you can show it off in 360, or, you know, award ceremonies. Oh my goodness. I've seen a few of those happening, and that's really great because award ceremonies are so important and, you know, scholarships are great, but I've sat through them and sometimes they're 4 hours long. It's a lot, but you know, feeling like you're in the auditorium while you're, you know, hanging out at home and you get to celebrate, you know, student success. I mean, what's better? So that's kind of, I mean, I hope, does that kind of answer your question?
No, that is phenomenal. And I love the direction of this conversation. So just kind of as an aside, in my district in Allen ISD, we have this really incredible facility that's all focused on STEAM learning for our K-12 students. And we've started conversations about VR about 12 times because it is the perfect space. And all of us kind of keep tripping over our feet, or we keep getting tripped up on kind of what to do first. So let's get even more tactical. If and when some of our listeners want to start implementing this, because I know that you're going to get a ton of questions when we give your contact information at the end of this episode. Probably half of them will be from me. But where can people start? So the biggest hurdle that I've run into, and please tell me what I'm misunderstanding, is the headset piece. So if you have an Oculus, for example, because that's owned by Facebook and it's a very popular headset, then you can access things. But if you don't have one, you can't. So to your point about accessibility, how can we take these 360 opportunities and make them available to our general publics who may or may not have access to a moderately expensive headset?
That has been the name of the game for me since day one, because there wasn't a lot out there that was at a reasonable price point. And, you know, I just had to work with what I had. And I also needed to show, you know, my board of directors and everything that, yeah, this investment, this is good. Like, I'm not just fooling around here. So when it comes to 360, the way that I started is by just getting your feet wet a little bit. So we purchased used we purchased used iPods, actually. So iPod Touches, it was like the last generation of them. And we popped them into these basically like foam headsets because, you know, Google Cardboard exists, but who wants to put cardboard on your face the whole time?
Right.
Like, it's a great entry level way, but you want something a little bit more comfortable, especially if you're working with students. Like, you know, you want to make sure you can wipe it down, you know, really keep it clean. And I found one on Amazon for like $30. And I grabbed a couple of them, you know, just enough to make sure I had enough for the iPads and or the iPods. And Yeah, we went from there. And all you have to do from there is just find apps that are 360, or even better, go onto YouTube and you can watch a 360 video right through that. And you're just using a smartphone at that point, like, and okay. It's just lenses. So that's a really reasonable, you know, starting point. But this has always been kind of the hang up, especially when Oculus got, you know, the acquisition with Facebook. That was an absolute nightmare because it's so incredibly difficult to be able to really make this accessible if you need a Facebook profile, if you need a digital right. footprint. Like that's a really difficult sell. So what we kind of did at BATV was use our primary Facebook, and we only had one headset. So we used like our company Facebook and the account that was associated with that, and we linked that up with the Quest. Now, when it comes to figuring out how to do this with a broader group of students, that's where things get a little murkier, because mm-hmm. I personally don't feel comfortable asking a parent, hey, can you set up a Facebook profile for your kid exactly. to do this? Like, it just exactly. it feels weird. So that's kind of where, you know, thinking really creatively about how people can watch a 360 video is really key. And I keep going back to 360 because it's a really great entry point. A lot of the experiences can sometimes get a little tricky, and trying to figure out what games are appropriate or we don't want to play games, you know, that sort
right,
of thing.
Right.
So, and I think in terms of, you know, for a school district or a PR practitioner that focuses more on educational settings, having 360 be the first step that you take takes away some of that fear. Because when people hear VR, they automatically think, oh my gosh, software developer, I don't know how to do that. Oh,
right. It's intimidating. So
cool. It's very intimidating, but it doesn't have to be. So that's been the question with the headsets. It's really tough. It's really, really challenging. And this is partly why I felt it was so important to go to that conference, because all of these things, you know, people are making these decisions months ahead, you know, sometimes even years ahead of releasing it to the public. So right. why can't we know what they're up to?
Right, exactly. You
know? So, yeah. So I'm curious to see how this kind of plays out, especially now that the Oculus Quest is out, because, you know, now they're in the second generation of it. Prior to that, they tried to launch the Oculus Go, which is a seated, you know, experience. You put on the headset, you can click around with the controller that they give you, but it's not like you can reach out and grab things. And for that reason, people mm-hmm. weren't really buying them. But I will say, for schools and for students, and especially for, you know, people that may have some sort of VR sickness. So basically, if you put on a VR headset and you automatically feel like, oh, this is not for me, it's totally right. normal. So I found that the Oculus Go was a really good entry point for that. But yeah, the Facebook question, and then the Microsoft question too. It's just, there's so many layers to it now that there wasn't a couple years ago. And it's kind of frustrating. I'm not going to lie. It's like a little like, oh gosh, like why are we making it more challenging?
What's up guys, Justin here. Aaron and I are super excited to welcome back Class Intercom as our sponsor for season 3 of School PR Happy Hour. Last year, we told you that Class Intercom is a comprehensive social media management tool designed specifically for schools that allow for content creation from an unlimited number of users, including students, in a safe and carefully moderated way. That's still very true. But did you know that Class Intercom also has a reporting feature that does complete archiving, all for one school-friendly price? To learn more, head to classintercom.com and get started today.
No, I mean, it's a perfectly appropriate point, because I know our audience, and I know that they're sitting here and they're like pulling over, because we have a lot of commuters who listen to this. So they're probably pulling over and they're pulling out their phone to make some notes, because we love emergent technology in school PR. We love finding ways to take things that are happening in industry and make them applicable for our kids. But our kids, our students, are typically not 18. And if they are, they're seniors. So it's the last year that we have with them. So that raises a handful of ethical questions, especially when we're talking about something like a forced social media account. And I know that that's been a real area of concern and passion for you as well, is kind of the ethical piece around virtual reality. So can you share a little bit about your thoughts on ethics and how that plays into this technology?
Oh, goodness, I could write a whole book. So I used to have a ton of students. Well, no, not a ton, but several students that would give me such a hard time. They turn to me and say, Amber, I know what I'm doing. I understand the headset. You don't need to be so worried about how long I'm using it for. I know what to do, you know. And I would just be like, nope, I'm not about to start scrambling your brains, because the thing with VR is what it does. Yeah, it's like, I don't know what's going on. So, so when it comes to VR, I mean, what it basically does is it's an image that's reflected through, you know, lenses. And there's a lot of processors and a computer in there and the headset, or, you know, the iPod Touch that you are using in 2017. and yeah, so what it does is it basically messes with the part of your brain that distinguishes like fact from fiction. So that part of your brain doesn't stop developing until you're about 25. So wow. As a, you know, 9-year-old or a 10-year-old, you know, like some of these experiences can feel very real. And it's because that part of the brain is still developing. And from an ethical standpoint, having, you know, I would have events, I would go to the public library and I'd bring the headset for free comic book day, and people would love it. They'd play like Spider-Man experiences, and we would do like 360 videos where they were like flying through the air, stuff like that. But every single time I would have a parent with a very young kid, maybe like 5, and they would be like, they want to play this one, they want to play this. And I would have to turn to them and say, all right, well, you can do like 10 minutes on the iPod Touch, you know, like entry level stuff. But if Oculus is saying that you need to be 13 to be able to do this, I'm going to say, yeah, like I'm following the rules with this. I'm a rule breaker in some ways, but when it comes to people's brains, I like to be very cautious.
I think that's a pretty safe bet there.
Right. That's what I think too. So, and I would get some flack from it, but in terms of the ethics, so there's that. There's the, you know, how long are you going to spend in VR? I mean, at that conference I went to, there was an executive on stage who was like, yeah, I watched a VR movie last night and it was a 3-hour documentary and I fell asleep with a headset on my face. And I'm like, one, that's uncomfortable. And two, what is that doing to your brain while you're
sleeping?
Right,
seriously.
So, yeah, it's not good. So then, you know, the other ethical implications, and this is something that was really important to me, you know, when I started as youth coordinator and when I, you know, went into being the director of educational services at the station, I felt it was so important to leave things better than when I came in. And right. I really wanted to make it clear to my students that I was working with that you are the ones that are in control of things. You are the ones that have the power, and you need to listen to what your gut is saying. And if it's saying, maybe I shouldn't be doing this, maybe think twice. And I would break down concepts like, you know, cookies to fourth graders, you know, not cookies like Oreos, cookies like they are tracking what you're doing online and every TikTok that you watch, you know, Vine was the thing back then. But, you know, like, and just seeing their eyes widen, like, oh my goodness, like, that's why. And I would go through different websites sometimes and, you know, type in something random into Google and we would see how many sponsored ads would come up, you know. And people would kind of be like, what does that have to do with Access TV? Well, everything's online. Everything is digital. And our job as Access TV stations and community media centers is to inform and educate and empower people through media. So if media is going online, we're going to go there with it. And yeah, we still got our awesome channels with our fantastic coverage, but we can do so much more. And it's such a great resource that a lot of towns and communities don't see. So if you're, you know, a school PR practitioner, and especially if you're trying to figure out, you know, media literacy stuff or media production, you're on a shoestring budget, go chat with your access television station. They're always looking for ways to connect. And even if they're really small, you know, there's a connection there. There's something there that you could maybe tap into. And, you know, in terms of the ethics with VR, that's kind of what I was trying to unravel, was this sort of weird digital divide that was happening between people that thought Access TV is just for television and what is VR doing here?
Right.
And it was just really, it was tough, but so there's the brain scrambling element, as I like to call it. And then definitely I would say the advertising aspect, just being really conscious of what experiences you are having students go through and experiencing them yourself before you roll anything out. That is a huge, huge thing. Because everybody reacts differently to VR, especially the first time that they experience it. It's really, it's not unpredictable, so to speak, but it's definitely unexpected. Like when you walk
intense.
Into VR for the first time, yeah, it's really intense. My very first time using VR and the whole thing that set this off, I went to this media literacy conference in Boston, and I already knew a lot was what was being talked about, so I was kind of bored. Mm-hmm. And I found out that one of the other stations was coming with a VR headset, and they were doing this big initiative. There was this whole program they were trying to build out with 360 and VR, and I was like, what? So they were doing free demos. So I, you know, slipped out, and I was like, all right, I'm going to go into that other room early, and I'm going to see, you know, what this is all about. And I'll never forget, I put on the headset, and they asked me what experience I wanted to do. Do you want to go, you know, snorkeling in a cave? Do you want to go swim with the dolphins? Do you want to go, you know, try and hunt down zombies? And I was like, you know what? Yeah, let's do the zombies. Let's do that.
Of course.
And I just remember them all laughing. They're like, okay. And you enter in, and it's like this dark environment. All you have is your flashlight. And the only way that you can see anything, it's like in real life, like you can only see where your flashlight is pointing. But mm-hmm. there's also, you know, you hear the zombies behind you slowly coming up closer, and you can hear the breathing. And I turned around, and there was a zombie right in my face. And it was just, oh my goodness, it was so cool. But
that is stressful to hear you tell secondhand.
Everybody I tell that to, they're like, how did you do that? And I'm like, it's just me. Like, I was a strange
child. Yeah,
like
the hair on the back of my neck is sticking up right now. Like, and I love spooky stuff, and that still is like a lot. That's a lot.
It's intense. So that's why it's important. Like, you know, students, and a lot of students, they'll know about these experiences. They'll know about these apps. They'll know about things. The matter is trying it out for yourself and having a discussion about it. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you're an educator, if you're a parent, like, it doesn't matter. You need to have the students' input about what they are experiencing, what they're watching, and not just have your own, you know, judgment about it. Because a lot of the parents that would come up to me at first, they'd say, well, this is great, but it's just for games, right? So that sort of implication there is what really would get my hackles up, because I'm like,
sure,
we can create this. We can create things that can be VR and be 360, and we can do this on a local level. Why do these big companies need to be the ones that are the, you know, heavy hitters? They're the ones that produce all the content. Their Oculus has, like, you know, really big limitations when it comes to independent developers, and that would just really frustrate me, because community media, your whole thing is just producing different stories and producing, you know, events and things like that. And that was not in line with what I was seeing in the VR industry. So I said, you know what, we're going to go in a different direction. And that's where I got the first 360 camera. It was really, really not great quality. I'll be honest. It was, I was devastated. Oh my goodness. I was like, it's HD. This is right when 4K was coming out. It's like, it's full HD. It's only like $250. It's got some decent reviews online. Let's go for it. And because this was also at the time where for 360, instead of having one little camera, people were building their own rigs and attaching GoPros all around this big, huge honking circle. And then you would stitch all the footage together. Like
that 100% sounds like something that my co-host Justin would do. Like he's listening now and I guarantee he's nodding his head like, yep, that sounds like a good plan.
And see, like when I saw it, I was like, that's great. But oh my gosh, that's so impractical. So what I started doing was I had this like cheaper camera. And my goal for the summer, because I ran a lot of summer programs, oh my goodness. One of my goals for the summer was to have a full week where people learn about 360 video, learn about VR, and then produce their own VR video, like their own 360 video. And what we did was we took, you know, this story of these, you know, there's a bank robbery basically happening inside of the station, and all the different spots would be, you know, all the different spots in the station would be different hiding places for the robbers, and the camera would be one of the robbers. So we had all these different scenes in different areas of the station where the students were fully involved. They were, you would see them in the background trying to hide from, you know, the police officer, or you would see them, you know, ducking under a table when the fake alarm went off. And we would move the camera underneath the table. So you would feel like you were sitting right next to, you know,
that's amazing. Old
Diego. Yeah. And it's really cool. It was really, really great. And I think the biggest thing with 360 that people don't always remember is that, yes, it can be used for like static images and for, you know, tours of schools. I did a really awesome tour with some of my former interns of the brand new high school they built in Billerica. Like we got to set it up and put together this really, really nice, you know, before it even opened to the public, people were able to go and walk around virtually on YouTube, which, you know, that got a really good response. But in terms of 360 in general, there's like that sort of still aspect. But in terms of video, there's so much opportunity because the whole thing is based around how can you create an experience around this one camera? How can you think about the entire room rather than just this is your one shot? This is like your one little frame. This is your angle that you get. You get this one thing and then you move on to the next thing. 360, you can see the entire room. So you need to think about, how are the lights going to look? Is your office chair slightly askew and does it look funny? Where is like, you know, those sorts of elements. And it's really fun when you make it interactive, when you have people coming towards the camera, you know, not too close because then you get kind of like a weird fisheye looking thing. But people coming towards the camera and like talking to you, or, you know, something that was really incredibly powerful to me was one of the panels at the conference. It was the last day of that Silicon Valley conference, and I was just heated. Oh, I was heated. Everybody was like, you're with what? Where are you from? And I saw this. It was the very last panel of the day, and it was all about social justice and 360 video. And I was like, wow, that's fascinating. I was the only person in that room. And it was basically these panelists talking about how the UN was doing this really awesome 360 video and 360 experience where you experience what it's like to be in a malaria-ridden home, like sitting in bed. What is it like when you have malaria?
And that's pretty intense.
Going through – yeah, it was really intense, and I only saw a clip of it, but wow, like what an impact. And at the very end, yeah, there was a call to action to donate. And that's what a lot of these experiences are. You go through the whole thing, and then at the very end, it's either, you know, go watch Coco in theaters, which, by the way, if you ever want to have a really good VR experience, Coco VR. Just trust me.
Oh.
Like, it will blow
your mind. We'll have an offline conversation about that.
It is so fun. It is my favorite experience, and it's a big commercial for a movie, so... But I think that's the element that's kind of lost a lot in these conversations, is that it doesn't have to be that complicated. It can be as simple as just, you know, teaching a math class. Like, what's it like to be in a kindergarten classroom? You know, what can a kid expect? It can be that simple. and just putting, you know, a 360 camera on a tripod, making sure the legs don't split too far out, because then that's kind of distracting. But I think that's one of the big ethical implications. It's really important to me. So,
I mean, Amber, you have given us so much phenomenal information. I feel like we could talk about this for another hour, but I know that there are a lot of people who are going to want to learn more, because as you've shared, there are so many opportunities to start to bring this into kind of the K-12 sector. Where are some of the best places that people can contact you if they have further questions or they just want your advice?
Oh, of course. Well, I am on LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn. And since I do a lot of social media stuff, I'm on a lot of the socials. So I'm on Instagram at Amber L. Krasinski. You can also email me, amberlkrasinski@gmail.com. Or reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm working on my professional website now, which has been an ongoing thing based on school stuff. So, but yeah, so those are usually like the best ways, you know, DM me on Instagram, you know, hit me up on LinkedIn. I'll message you. Yeah.
Perfect. Amazing. Thank you so much. And honestly, I kind of feel like our friends that practice school PR in the Northeast are like kind of peeking their ears. So you might be getting some calls from some of our school PR friends up there in your general area, because there's just so much potential for this.
There really is. And I think, you know, one of the cool things is that this can really bring a lot of people together. One of my former colleagues at the station was actually able to transform, like work with a community member to transform an entire river festival into a 360 experience during the pandemic. So it's possible. And we shared offices. She would look at me all the time and be like, girl, what are you doing? But once she started doing it, she was like, that's for the kids. Like, I don't, whatever. But then she took the time to really think about it, and she was like, okay, now I get it. So if you want a now I get it moment, come chat with me. I'm more than happy. I do consultations and stuff. So yeah.
Perfect. You're going to be an amazing resource. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with me tonight.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. This has been great.
Well, that does it for another episode of School PR Happy Hour. Thanks for listening. Special thanks as well to our guest this episode, Amber Krasinski, for her expertise in virtual reality and all of her great ideas for school PR practitioners. Thanks for listening to School PR Happy Hour. If you have an idea for an episode in season 3, we're still booking guests for the spring semester. Reach out to us on social media or send us an email at schoolprhappyhour@gmail.com. And until next time, let's all try to be a little bit better at our jobs every day.